Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. The Center for Performing Arts at Rhinebeck will present Alice Ripley in concert this Saturday at their annual gala. The Tony Award-winning actress is a true Broadway icon whose credits include The Who's Tommy, Sunset Boulevard, Sideshow, and Next to Normal. Alice Ripley, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much for having me, Sarah.
When you put together a concert like the one you're doing at the Center in Rhinebeck, what do you have to consider as you put your set together?
I think the venue plays a big part in the songs that you choose to put together and the people who you think might be in the audience. So I start there. The set also needs to be fueled by joy, so it needs to be something that I really am excited about doing and something my accompanist is excited about doing. So that's what we're focused on right now.
How did you discover through your career that the set needed to be fueled by joy, and how do you find that joy?
I think that's an interesting question, because I think that you discover it when it's missing.
Mm-hmm.
You discover how it needs to be continued, the fueling. Whatever it takes for you to refill your energy stores. For me, it has a lot to do with meditation and spending time with friends and family, and also singing for the joy of it. When I do that, then it becomes more clear what might work in a set, because I'll take the things that I feel like saying and hearing, literally like the subject matter, the words that I feel like singing. I want the set to be filled with those kinds of experiences for me, so that I feel like you almost feel like you're accomplishing something more than just entertainment. You feel like you're getting a message across to people, which doesn't have to be a heavy message, but it really is just what's on my mind right now, what I feel like saying.
You mentioned working with your accompanist to put the set together. Who, I should know this, but I don't. Who is your accompanist for the concert in Rhinebeck?
Well, for this, this is our first time doing a show like this together. His name's Micah Young, and we met recently on a couple of different projects. He came in, he was he swooped in and saved the day a couple of times for me recently on two different projects. So I thought, I have to remember him next time I need somebody to help me. And my accompanist, Jessica, is not going to be in Rhinebeck because she's in medical school. I don't know what she's doing that day, but she's not available. So Micah's, I'm so glad that he gets to fill in, because he's really a wonderful musician. And we're focusing on, it's like a pastiche of songs.
Are there any songs from your career that people who are familiar with you expect to hear when they see you in concert?
Well, yeah, there are a couple. I call them the Ripley hits, and this concert will definitely have some of those. I think that I really enjoy singing them, and also sometimes I'm afraid I'm not going to get out of there alive if I don't sing them. So, you know, we'll include some of those, which means songs from Next to Normal.
Of course.
Songs from Sideshow. Also, Tommy was my very first Broadway show, and I'm a songwriter, and I play guitar and sing my own music, and so I like to take the guitar and play songs from Tommy and sing them. The audiences, they're wilder than you think they are. They're old rockers at this point.
Yeah.
I'm counting on it.
No, you see that. Yeah, you see that a lot with audiences. When I attend a lot of musical theater and rock shows too, but once a fan knows the words, or they remember it from however long ago in their lives, they're really ready to jump in there and bop around with you.
Yes, and Tommy, that was my first Broadway show, and it was one of the first true rock musicals.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually I call it a rock opera.
Right.
I think Next to Normal fits into that category too. But that shows you how, you know, the theater world, well, it used to be pop music back. Sending the Clowns was a pop hit on the radio. I was talking about it in my concert last week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very middle-of-the-road musical theater, but it became a pop hit. So there have been eras in the past where musical theater has become popular music, and then there are other eras where they take different paths. So a show like Tommy, the audience, I think they do remember it from the original concept album, and they are Broadway fans. And so, you know, they're getting a double pleasure at that point. And the audience usually really love to see an original cast member singing something from the show. So I focus on that when I sing Ripley hits, the songs that are from shows that I actually, like I was in the original cast.
With Tommy being your first show on Broadway, was that the goal? Were you working toward getting on Broadway when you did?
There was a point where a friend of mine said, look, do you want to be on Broadway? Just say it. You know, it really was one of those moments, and I just said, okay, all right, yes, of course I do. And that might have been the first time I ever said it out loud. I was quoted once as saying that I didn't ever really dream that big, which is kind of a sad quote to pull out. But what I meant by that was I don't have – it's a luxury when you're a blue-collar artist, which is really what I consider myself to be. When you're in the theater, you don't have time to really sit around and daydream. It's a blood, sweat, and tears job, and it's a craft that requires your physical body to do it. And so, in other words, I mean, I knew that was a prize out there that I felt completely qualified to be. I felt like I could get it, the Tony Broadway show. I felt like I was qualified to do it. And that's really what fueled me on my entire trajectory toward it. But I wasn't necessarily focused on that as a goal, if that makes any sense. Like, you know, you're too busy looking at what's right in front of you, this raw material that you have to make sense of. And then suddenly you're in a position where you're thinking, hey, man, this is kind of cool because I might get some attention for my performance, this, you know, from the Tony people or whatever. You start to realize that you're in a role that begs for the attention. I mean, the role is saying, look at me. And if the performer does a good job, you know, that's kind of hard to resist. You know, it is when I'm in the audience, it's hard to resist that kind of performance. Can. When they're in the right role, mm-hmm. And it's a Tony role.
Can any role be a Tony role, or are there lots of roles in shows that mightn't ever be considered, no matter how good the performance is, just by the way they're placed in the story of the show?
This is a story I tell frequently to students and other people. When I was in Sunset Boulevard, I was in the original cast.
With Glenn Close.
Yeah, and I was there for the entire run. It's an interesting story because Judy Kuhn played Betty Schaefer, which is the role I played, in L.A., and she's on the recording because they made that cast album in Los Angeles, but it had not come to Broadway yet. And Judy Kuhn got pregnant, and every time I see her daughter Anna now, I say, thanks for being born because you were my big break. You know? Mm-hmm. And I replaced Judy so that when Sunset came to Broadway, I was Betty. Mm-hmm. And George Hearn was Max. The whole cast was great, but I really looked up to George because he seemed to have a balance between life and work. And he's the one that took me by the shoulders the day that the Tony nominations came out, and I didn't get one. And it's because I didn't even have Betty doesn't even have her own song.
Right. She has parts of songs. But.
And I only say this with great respect. She really is a device, that role. It's a device to keep Joe and Norma apart or bring them together.
I thought I had everything I needed. My life was set. My dreams were in place. My heart could see way into the future. All of that goes when I see your face. I should hate you. There I was, the world in my hand. Can one kiss away everything I planned?
And when you embrace that, you accept that as your role, then you play to the hilt. But it's not really, it's not a Tony role, Betty. I remember in rehearsal asking Angela Weber, I remember saying, so are you going to write Betty her big song now? Do I get my big coming of age song? He said, it's in the works, right? And he just smiled at me. To answer your question, George Hearn, that day that the nominations came out, everybody, all the other principals got a nomination. And I got this beautiful bouquet from the producers. They were so kind. And they said, you know, you're a star in our eyes. And thank you for everything you do. But George came into my room that day and he took me by the shoulders and he said, you need to know that this is not a reflection on your work. This is because of the role that you're in. He was addressing something that I instinctively knew, but like I really put the headlights on it at that moment, which is, and I tell this to my students, you need to go out and find the roles. If you're interested in winning a Tony, you need to make sure you get in a Tony role because they really are in their own category. It's the kind of role that begs for attention. It gets a little asterisk in the history books, you know, that kind of role. Like, and it becomes the one that everybody wants to play. So you look for those, and since he gave me that advice, I have been more pointedly looking for that. And when a role like Diana comes your way, which is the role I won my Tony for.
Of course, and Next to Normal.
I ended the sentence with a preposition, please excuse me. that's the role for which I won my Tony.
Mm-hmm.
That's when that came my way, I thought, whoa, this is, you kind of look all the way down the pipeline at that point and go, this could be huge.
Mountains make you crazy. Here it's safe and sound. My mind is somewhere hazy. My feet are on the ground. Everything is balanced here and on an even keel. Everything is perfect. Nothing's real.
I didn't really know how big the impact was going to be. I didn't know that the show was going to go on to win the Pulitzer Prize. And, you know, being produced all over the world. As a matter of fact, a few members of the original company were going to Argentina in September to sing in a concert with the Argentinian cast of Next to Normal.
Is it still in that moment at the Tony Awards surprising to hear your name called?
Yes, it is. But at the same time, by the time I was seated in that chair with my blue gown on and I was waiting, Elton John was sitting right in front of me. He was sitting so close I could have picked lint out of his ear. But by the time I'm sitting there, you really, like, I would be surprised if I didn't win at that point. And that was just because of the journey that I had been on to that point. It became so clear to me that everybody wanted this role to win. I'm really glad that it did go the way it did, because otherwise I don't know what I would have done. I probably would have been one of those things where I would have walked up onto the stage anyway, even though they called somebody else's name.
For people who aren't familiar with the role, Diana is she's suffering from bipolar and getting treatment for it, and she suffers from hallucinations, and it's a very emotional, wrenching role to watch. It must also have been that way to play night after night.
Yeah, I really didn't know. I mean, by the time she entered my life, I was already in the middle of my life. I've been doing this since I was a teenager, so I thought I knew what I was getting into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't really, though.
Right.
It was like opening Pandora's box, or like I like to liken it to the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark when the bad guys open up the ark and their faces melt.
Right.
It's kind of like that. Like, I kind of thought I knew what was going to be in there, but I didn't understand. Now I really do. Now it's almost like I have living proof of something I already had a hunch about, which was you attract the work when you're an actor. You attract the work, and the work attracts you. And you work your way through your life through the work, and the work becomes the story of your life. And, I mean, that's what was happening, you know. So I feel like I learned a lot about myself, and I galvanized myself as a performer in a way that I never had been before. And it is true that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So I'm ready for a revival.
I took a friend of mine to see it in a regional production in Glens Falls, New York. And while she like enjoyed it and understood, she also said, you know, at the end, why did you take me to see this? I'm so upset now. And I was like, well, that's what it's for. It's art being just about as important as it can be.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I might go to the Portrait Gallery in D.C. and sit in front of a corner and end up sobbing easily. So I don't feel like it's a negative thing that people, when they watch a show like Next to Normal or, you know, even a show like Rent, it's like a fireball that explodes your heart open. But that's good to have an open heart. It's good to break through the blockages that you have in there with your feeling, and that's really what Next to Normal does. I think that the Times said in the review that it's a feel-everything musical. Because, you know, you hear feel-good musical. Because there were plenty of laughs.
Sure.
And moments to go, and then moments where you didn't even get to think, where you were just devastated by, it caught you by surprise, which I think it's good theater that way. So, you know, we'll be doing a couple of Next to Normal songs for sure, and some sideshow songs, which that show also has a cult following. And then Micah and I want to focus on my influences. We're heavily pop from the pop world. So we'll be singing some pop. I think they're the pop greats like Carole King and Billy Joel and Frank Sinatra.
The Center for Performing Arts at Rhinebeck presents our guest Alice Ripley in concert as part of their annual gala this Saturday. Speaking of Sideshow and Tony roles, you and Emily Skinner were co-nominated for your roles as conjoined twins Daisy and Violet Hilton. You mentioned when speaking about Diana Next to Normal, you could see that nomination and that win coming down the barrel. What about the co-nomination for Sideshow?
That was a huge roll of the dice, Sideshow. I had never done anything like that, where you start from material that was that raw, mm-hmm. and you are there in the middle of it for a number of years, helping to develop it. And people, you know, the writers are thinking of you while they're writing these things. That was the first time I'd done that. And so I was so in love with that process that I learned the best thing to do, which is what I then continue to do years later, is, like I said earlier, don't look too far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You look right in front of you, because that's really my job description, is to be an actor. My job description isn't to be a promoter or a marketing person or even a director or producer. You know, sometimes you can do more than one thing. So, but with Sideshow, I was really focused on the process. And by the time we got to Broadway, we were still going, we were pinching ourselves like, can you believe we get to do this and get paid for it? This is amazing. So when we got the, nobody predicted that we were going to get nominated jointly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really crossing my fingers for a nomination, because it is true that the nomination is the best part, because then you get to be, you know, it's good just to be nominated is what they say. I do think that's true, because then you get to play, you get to be part of the game, you know, the whole process, all the festivities for the whole thing leading up to the night. And that's really fun, because you're hanging out with all your friends.
Right.
These are all people that you've worked with, and the longer you're in town working, the more people you know. And it ends up being, you know, a nice reunion with everybody. So I didn't expect that at all with Sideshow. And Emily and I were both, like, we were blown away and so honored to be remembered, because it had been months since the show closed, and it didn't run very long, and now I take that as a sign of respect, where the community says, you guys did a great job. We have to acknowledge this. We have to acknowledge that this is not something that you see every day. And I know that our Tony nominations that we got for that show and the cast album we ended up making with Sony Classics, those are the reasons why the show was recently revived, because I think without that album especially, people wouldn't even know about the show. Because we only ran for a couple of months, Sideshow.
I'd settle down, never to roam, find a nice husband and home. I want to be like everyone else, but not like my sister says. She wants stability. She would like fame. I'd like serenity. Frenzied acclaim. Though we can't agree on a single response, we want what everyone wants. Only what everyone wants. The same as everyone wants.
Anyway, we were thrilled when we got the nomination. It just feels so good to be acknowledged for your work. You know, because you do work really hard, and it's nice to have somebody go, you guys did a great job.
Right.
Come on, you can come to the party.
What is the, you mentioned the revival, which I know that you saw. What is the sensation of watching that show from the audience when you created it from the ground up the first time it went to Broadway?
It was extremely intimate for me. Like, it was very personal. And by the time I got to the point where I could go and sit in the audience and feel generous enough to sit there with an open heart. By the time I got there and did that, which I succeeded in doing, I was so glad that I went, because I was just so proud of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I sat there in the audience, I felt like a proud parent. Like, these are my kids. This is pretty awesome. Because actually, you know, they are half my age, frankly. It could be my kids. So I got to that point where I just felt proud. And proud of my work, and proud that the show was seen in a way where, you know, people wanted to revive it. And that night, it was a great reunion. I saw so many people I hadn't seen in a long time. And I felt really proud of it, you know. It's funny that it had the same trajectory that we had. The same amount of, it ran for the pretty much the same amount of time.
Yeah.
And it ran during the same time of year. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
You mentioned a few minutes ago your pop influences, and also mentioned that you're, you know, a guitar player in a band. You have a band, Ripley the Band. How is performing with your band different from performing in a concert, different from performing in a play where you're playing a character? Do you have to set your mind up in a different way for each of those parts of your career?
I used to think that that would be true, because it seems like it would be, but through experience I've learned that whenever I'm on stage, I have a certain persona that I'm showing. I get myself to that place before I get up in front of the crowd. It's going to be a different place where I end up when I get up to sing an evening of All Sondheim in a cabaret-type space. It's going to be different than when I get up to play a character, totally different. I mean, the logistics of it are just different. When I'm playing a character, I have pin curls, a microphone, and a wig on my head.
Right.
You know, it's different. It just feels different than when you're on stage and you're holding a mic. You might not, you know, it might seem like it wouldn't make that much of a difference, but it really does. Just like the venue, the actual venue where you're playing or singing makes a huge difference in what the audience is seeing. Because we're talking about live energy here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when the people come into the room, you know how that always changes the room. When people enter, you know, it's different than it was at soundcheck. When there's nobody in the audience, it changes it in a good way. It's because everybody brings their energy. And, you know, that's why I love performing, because of that, because you never know what it's going to be. It's always different. Even if you've rehearsed it and you've done it a million times, that show today is going to be different than yesterday, because you're a little bit different, because your instrument is your body. It's live. So it's not going to be like a machine where it's predictable every single time. I mean, you hope that nobody notices anything different. You hope it's always the same, but you can tell that it's a little bit different. Because today I had an avocado, so I feel a little more powerful than I did yesterday when I had Cheerios. I mean, it really does make, it does play into it, for sure.
Alice Ripley, thank you again for joining me. It's been wonderful speaking with you. I'm a big fan, and I appreciate your time.
Sarah, thank you so much. I love public radio, and I was thrilled to be able to talk with you today.
Alice Ripley will perform at the 2015 Center Gala in Rhinebeck with special guest Tony-nominated actress Jennifer Damiano this Saturday. To learn more, visit centerforperformingarts.org or wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.